Welcome to the A to Z of Sex with me, Dr. Lori Beth. I'm an intimacy coach and psychologist. I created this show to explore the erotic alphabet, to help you learn more about desire and expressing your desires, discover ways to spice up your relationship and create that sizzling relationship you've always wanted. I do this through solid science, real life stories, and interviews with an exciting variety of sexperts. Listen in weekly as I share key strategies to help you create your ideal sexual life. Make sure you join us to access even more sexual strategies on my blog, A to Z of Sex. Access our monthly newsletter with subscriber-only offers at www.atozofsex.com. That's A-T-O-Z-O-F-S-E-X. Welcome to the A to Z of Sex. I'm Dr. Lori Beth Bisbee, and I am your host. We are working our way through the erotic alphabet one letter at a time. Just a reminder, this podcast deals with adult content, so if you don't have total privacy, you might want to put on your headphones. Today, the letter is I, and I is for interest. You know, sexual interest is often fickle. We can find ourselves interested in someone one minute, and then after time, the interest dies. And long relationships often require work to keep interest alive. And the things we're interested in are wide and varied. Joining me today to talk about this is Frankie Cookney. She's a freelance journalist specializing in sex, relationships, gender politics, and social development. And she also hosts and produces her own sex podcast, which is called The Second Circle. Welcome to the show, Frankie.
Hello, thanks for having me.
So I find this topic a really, interesting one.
Yeah.
I find it fascinating how we can find somebody sexually really compelling.
Yeah.
And then suddenly it seems that goes.
Oh, totally. Yeah. I mean, I've had situations where I've gone almost from one extreme to the other, you know, like you're crushing so hard on somebody and then suddenly you're just over it. Almost to the point where I've been a bit kind of disgusted by how much I fancied them.
Yeah, it's sort of, I always find it odd when something like that happens because I'm not that type of person in the sense that I do have shades of gray, right? I'm not a black and white type of person. I am very intense, but I manage ambivalence pretty well. So to be really into somebody and then really not into them is sort of a strange juxtaposition that always feels really strange when it happens. And then I find myself questioning my own, was it real? My own, you know, instinct. Yeah. That, like, was that real? Why did I feel that? Was I feeling that sexual interest because of something else that had nothing to do with that?
Right. I think, I don't know. I mean, for me, I'm a journalist and I kind of have a specialist area now, but for a long time I was a general features writer and it actually really suited my personality because you do tend to really intensely focus on a subject when you're writing about it. And then suddenly you finish a story, you file, it's published and you're done with that.
Right.
So that experience of being quite obsessed and into something for a while and then not really having anything to do with it for a long time after that is quite usual in my day-to-day life. And I guess, yeah, you're right. It's funny because actually if I translate that into my sex life and my love life, I would think it was a bit weird. And I'd be like, huh, what's the matter with me? Like, was I just going through some weird phase where why was I kind of obsessing over that person? But actually I think it's the same really. You know, sometimes ideas and people come into your life and have a big presence and then they go out again. Yeah, maybe we're like, the temptation is slightly to kind of think something was amiss, but actually maybe that's just how we are.
Well, and that's interesting because one of the things that I have recently been talking about is this idea that we need to move away from the Disney myths, you know, and the Disney myths are there's one person that completes me.
Right.
And it's not the issue isn't one, right? It's monogamy isn't the issue I'm making, although I could. And that's a discussion for another day.
We can get into that. I'm here for it.
I'm polyamorous and I truly believe that even if people don't act on it, that this idea that one person can meet every need is actually a really big problem. And yeah. So sometimes friendships, not sexual relationships, will fill the other needs when somebody allows themselves to have actually emotionally intimate relationships with more than one person. So there's that, but the other myth is this sort of, and we all live happily ever after.
Right.
And it's this really, this stasis. And so the idea that somebody could come into your life and you could have a really intense relationship and the relationship could end and there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
I think it's actually a healthy idea.
Yeah, or even just the intensity of it could subside. Yeah, like you, me and my husband are ethically non-monogamous, and I find that one of the things I talk about a lot when I'm sort of explaining it to people is friendships and how you make new friends, and you're quite used to, as an adult, making a new friend and sort of being a bit caught up in that new friendship and having, you know, obviously if that was a romantic relationship, you know, you'd maybe refer to it as the new relationship energy that we talk about in non-monogamous contexts. But when it's a friend, that seems quite usual. You're like, oh, I've made this new friend and that person seems like you want to spend a lot of time with them. And then gradually, maybe you realize you don't have as much in common as you first thought, or it just calms down. Like, say it was a colleague or a coworker or something, you might find you were going out for lunch with them every day. And then after a while, you both get busy with your jobs and you don't hang out for a while. And you would think that was fine. And so if you sort of apply that logic to sexual and romantic relationships, you're like, oh, actually, this is just human behavior. This isn't like a weird...
It's not so strange.
Yeah.
But then it becomes a problem when you are in a monogamous relationship. When that happens, and that's your only outlet for your sex and sexuality.
Yeah.
And then you can see where it becomes a problem, because if my interest in my sexual partner wanes and I am told that fantasizing about other people really isn't cool, and I have agreed that I'm not going to have any other sexual experiences with anyone else.
Yeah.
And they're not terribly fussed about the fact that things have died down, then what do I do?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's so easy to start asking yourself, like, why have I lost interest in this? Like, this thing that I used to always want, whether that's a person or like an activity, why have I lost interest in this? You know, and sometimes the answer is really obvious. Like, I had a baby last year. And so for, you know, some months after that, I was not super interested in sex. But obviously there was a good reason. I was like, well, you know, my hormones are all over the place. My body feels completely bizarre. But actually, you know, that's oftentimes it's just time that makes us lose interest in stuff, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think there are all sorts of myths around it that make it more difficult to approach it and to examine it.
Yeah.
You know, like the idea that when you get to my age, because I'm 55, well, sex really isn't a big thing anymore, right?
Right.
Now, in my world, the people that I associate with, the people that I love, the people that I admire, many of them are, you know, fully sexually active all the way, you know, I know people in their 70s who are still having a grand time. And it's not just because of what I do. It's just, these are the people I gravitated towards.
Yeah.
So to me, it doesn't seem odd that I would still be looking to date and that, you know, I would still be looking to have new experiences because that's my model. But I know that for a lot of people that, because people I work with, And some family, you know, and friends who think, wow, you know, that's the time in your life where you should be, you know, not worried about that anymore. I'm not sure what we're supposed to be worried about. You know,
right. Yeah.
You know, I'm not sure what you're supposed to be worried about. You know, if you're at a stage where for a lot of people, a good portion of the child rearing is done.
Yeah.
And your career is going along. And you have more time with each other now. What are you supposed to be worrying about if you're going to take sex off the menu?
Yeah.
You don't know.
No.
Why? And it seems like a really strange thing to have an expectation that we kind of write it into the fabric and we don't question it. I think that's my problem with it. Some people, clearly their sex drive may drop off at a certain point, or their sexual interest in their partner may drop off, and they don't feel that they can do anything about it.
Right. So I guess what are you saying? Like we're kind of told that our sexual interest should stay, or we're told that it will drop off, but we're not supposed to do anything about it. I guess, yeah, we're not really kind of, we don't ever talk about how to, I guess, ride the waves of interest.
No.
Or deal with the fact that it ebbs and flows and it comes and goes. Yeah, I think that's really interesting. I mean, I've only been with my partner, well, we've been together for, I guess, 9-ish years now. So I don't think that we've really, you know, that's a long-term relationship, but we're not talking like a lifetime. So
it hasn't been an issue for you yet?
I mean, in the media aftermath of having a baby, sure. Yeah, I don't know. I think that one thing that I find is really interesting, maybe I'm going off on a bit of a tangent here, but this idea that if you do find that interest is waning, whether in that person or in the stuff that you generally do together, and I guess that goes for whether that's sex or anything really, you should actively try to work on that and rebuild it. Like, if I lose interest in my husband sexually, I should be working on that. We should be working on that together. How do we renew our sexual interest in each other? And I wonder whether actually we could say, okay, maybe we're just going through a phase of not being super interested in each other sexually. Perhaps now's the time to explore doing some other stuff away from each other. Obviously, for people who are monogamous, that's going to be either not an option or a very challenging idea. But I wonder about this idea that you should constantly be like working on your relationship rather than sort of accepting the stage that you're at.
I mean, I think the only problem that I have with that is that in my experience professionally, people don't work on their relationships a lot. So if you're not actually talking about these things, you know, working on it might be talking about it and saying, so this is the stage we're at. And instead of trying to rebuild it, for example, is there something we want to explore together, or are we okay being where we are? But right. What actually happens is that people don't talk, and then people go and have affairs. And so that brings in a new element of stuff to contend with.
Right. And that's such a good point about, like, maybe you're okay with being not interested in each other at the moment. Yeah. So I was thinking of like all those magazine articles you get about how to like reinvigorate and like bring the spice back into your bedroom. And it's all about kind of like trying new things or like taking things up a notch. And there's no room for people to actually be fine with not being that interested.
Mm-hmm. And there needs to be room for the whole range. I mean, I, a lot of times I'm guilty of writing things about helping people to spice it up because that's what people will ask about. But the reality is that there are times that people really feel more asexual, and there's nothing wrong with that. And the problem only comes in when you have a really big mismatch. You know, you've got one partner who's really wanting to do everything, and the other partner's like, not right now. But I think if you're ethically non-monogamous, you're in a good place because you have more options.
Yeah. And you also have a culture of communicating about this stuff and checking in with each other and being like, so this is how I'm feeling. Are you feeling the same way? And are we both cool with it? In which case, we could just do nothing. That's an option. And, you know, or obviously kind of being, like you say, people, there could be a mismatch. You're saying, you know, I'm not really that interested right now. And your partner's like, okay, well, I'm actually feeling really bored and like I want to spice things up. So then you've got to come up with how to do that, how to compromise if you want to, you know, continue on that path together.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting to me though is that the number of people who are ethically non-monogamous who haven't managed to work out the social monogamy conditioning so that when they get to a place like this, they're not talking about it still.
Yeah.
They're not saying, hey, this is where I'm at. I want to talk to you about where I'm at. How are you feeling? They're kind of like, I think I'll go see if I can find another person to play with without actually there's no discussion. It's just
whatever. Oh my God, totally. And yeah. I'm definitely not saying that I'm like a model of of citizen when it comes to that at all. Like, you know, there was definitely a period after I had the baby when my husband was kind of like, okay, so you seem like you're not super into sex at the moment. And I was like, no, I'm not. And that was kind of the end of the conversation. And, you know, like in an ideal world, I would have said, and how do you feel about that? And where are you on this? But I was so wrapped up in myself and my hormones and my new baby that I just didn't have space for his feelings. But, you know, like 10 months down the line, we're kind of getting back on track of communicating a bit more. But yeah, I'm just saying, like, I can sort of hypothetically say that this is what we should be doing, but I cannot hand on heart tell you that's always what I do.
I think it's a hard thing to do. Because part of the reason that it's hard is because we are really socially conditioned. And so, I have a friend who will, you know, we'll talk about stuff and she'll go, oh God, that's monogamy thinking, isn't it? And we're really socially conditioned to completely believe that there is only one. So you think about things like, well, if this relationship ends, oh my God.
Yeah.
I'll be alone. Like, why? You know, why would you think that? Or there's one true love in your life. And you know, we grow up on this stuff still.
Mm.
And internalize it, and then it kind of comes out at the weirdest times.
Right. Yeah. And I think, you know, I think we beat ourselves up a lot for that sort of thing. For not navigating it perfectly.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. And the fact is, you know, we're not going to navigate it perfectly. We're wonderfully flawed creatures, which I think is part of what makes us so interesting and exciting. But that doesn't stop me beating up on myself. So I don't know why it would stop anybody else beating up on themselves. It's a fascinating area because I, you know, sometimes interest is fueled completely physically. Sometimes it's biochemical. Sometimes it's energetic.
I think sometimes it's just down to like who you've been hanging out with and what you've been reading and, you know, like what porn you saw that week. I don't know. Like, I feel quite open to the idea that what I'm interested in sexually is massively influenced by what's going on around me and the people I've been talking to, the story, you know, the stories I've read. And, you know, to the point that like, I will interview somebody, let's say, for work, and they'll talk about something that I've never heard of. So then I'll go be looking that up. And then I'm thinking, oh, that sounds kind of interesting. Maybe I should get involved with that. So I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. I feel like you read a lot of sort of editorial about how our sexuality is and our interests are shaped and influenced by, well, porn is obviously a good example of something that is often painted as a bad influence. But yeah, I mean, I think of course it is to some extent. Of course our interests, sexual and otherwise, are shaped by our environment. And that can actually be kind of fun.
Well, yeah, there's something about that fluidity that can be a lot of fun. The idea that we respond. I mean, as long as you're aware and you can kind of play with it,
right?
It can be great, you know, that we respond to the new things that we discover, that what we read, what we hear about, whatever the trend is, you know, and that we actually interact with that and we don't feel that we have to be fixed.
Right.
Way. I mean, we used to believe that things like orientation were fixed. In sexual orientation, even up till very recently, has been seen as fixed. I'm always very careful talking about this because if you say it's not fixed, then all of a sudden people start thinking that you can, you know, pray away the gay or, you know, away someone's.
Oh, if it's not fixed, then you can get rid of it. Yeah.
Primary orientation. And that's not what I mean. It's that we actually can move somewhat. And some people are very fluid.
Right.
And others are not very fluid, but they're somewhat fluid. And that's context dependent.
Yeah. I love what you said about the trend as well, because I feel like you get these stories about like, oh, all the millennials are doing anal now or whatever it is. And it's kind of like, oh no, they shouldn't be doing that. They shouldn't be pressured into doing anal. But like, can you imagine if you saw a similar article that was like, oh no, the millennials shouldn't be eating avocado. They've been peer pressured into eating avocado, this latest food trend. Like, trends are trends, man. Like, you get food trends, you get sex trends.
Yep.
That's okay. You know, and somebody's going to maybe get interested in doing something new. Like, obviously, after 50 Shades, people got interested in trying out light kink. And probably some of those people that opened a door to something huge for them. And other people went, ah, this is kind of fun, but it's not really for me. I don't know. It doesn't have to be this massive thing. It's just an interest that may be passing or may lead to a bigger interest.
Well, but when you're talking about sex, you know, people tend to get very, there's this very big brothery idea.
Absolutely.
Somebody needs to control what it is that I'm interested in, and because something might have a bad effect. I mean, I get interested when they talk about what all the millennials are doing. You know, I'm going to get upset if all the millennials are barebacking and not looking after themselves, their sexual health.
Right.
And they're spreading diseases. That's something to get worried about. The fact that they all decided to try anal, or all of a sudden everybody's polyamorous until they're not, you know, it doesn't bother me.
But at the same time, apparently, actually, millennials are less interested in sex than previous generations. You know, that's what I've been reading more recently. So,
you know, I always find it weird when we start talking about what generations are doing at that age, because it's different from other generations, because we don't know what they're going to look like yet. They're too young.
Yeah.
Right? You know, I mean, it makes no sense to be comparing. You have too small a sample to compare them on right now.
Yeah. And also, like, your sexual interest and your sexual activity are so far removed, especially at that age. I mean, if you'd counted the number of sexual partners I'd had at the age of, let's say, 22, it would be vastly disproportionate to how interested I was in sex. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But you're still figuring out how to even get laid in a way that feels good for you at that stage. So how on earth you can kind of compare and say that, you know, the amount of sex you're having is linked to your sexual interest? I don't really know.
It's just a weird thing to decide to measure. It is a strange thing to decide to measure. I would much prefer to know what people think about concepts and how that's translating into their behavior.
Yeah.
I really sounded like a scientist there for a second. You know,
we can get geeky.
You know, it's like, how does that translate into behavior? So we're talking about, one of the ones was anal sex, everybody being into anal. And so yeah, they're all into it. What does that mean? Does that mean they're actually all having anal sex? I don't think so. Yeah. I don't think so. I think they're talking about it. I think it's cool to talk about it. I don't know that they're all actually doing it.
Right.
And if they are, what do they think of this? And are we talking about heterosexual millennials? Are we talking about homosexual millennials, bisexual millennials? Are we talking about millennials who move through the spectrum?
Right. And what are we defining as anal sex anyway? Is it got to be a penis in an anus, or can we include sex toys? Can we include pegging? Can we include, like, digital penetration? You know, what even counts as anal sex?
So I read those articles and I kind of see those headlines. I must say, I don't usually finish the full article because I'm like, oh yeah, really? What? Oh, I can see that there's no decent sample size. And so it's just somebody kind of saying something to grab the attention.
Yeah.
And we see lots of that with sex as a topic and gender as a topic, but there's so much about sensationalizing and dramatizing, and so often so far away from the facts that it's no wonder people get confused.
Right. Yeah.
And what they think they should be interested in. Because that's the other thing. If something's trending, everybody thinks that they should want to do that.
Oh my God, totally. I actually, so as you mentioned at the beginning, I have a podcast too. And I did a little kind of solo episode recently, which was about exactly this idea of feeling like if something's a trend, then you should be interested in it. And that's something that I personally feel occasionally. I mean, you know, I try not to, but one of the things obviously about writing about sex is that I get exposed to a lot of ideas and people talk about them with great enthusiasm. And I start going, huh, should I be interested in that?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it can that can mess with you a little bit, because then I have to figure out if I really am interested in it or I just feel like I should be.
Yeah, and I mean, and also when you're interviewing people, you're talking with people, you're writing about it. And of course, when I'm coaching and doing therapy with people, there's this whole need to make sure that, you know, you're not going to squick at something publicly, because you don't want to.
Right.
No, you know, you don't want to pass judgment on somebody else's thing.
You don't want to be interviewing somebody and kind of accidentally be like, ew.
Right. You know, but it's like, it's, you know, in my head, if I have to, your kink is not my kink, right? You can have your thing.
Right. It happens.
Whatever it is. But it is interesting to me when that sort of, when you see a trend and you're hearing about a trend and it's not something you were ever at all interested in. And there is this strange process of, did I miss something?
Yeah.
Because now there's this whole FOMO thing, you know, there's so much fear of missing out, which, you know, it's an acronym to a feeling that people have always had. But I somehow think modern society really, and the internet and all of the sharing that we do, really kind of pushes that forward so that it's actually become a bigger thing than it used to be.
Oh, totally. Because what will happen is you'll see sort of one article about, oh, let's say water sports, you know, people who like to pee on each other and kind of use urine and sex. You'll see one article about that. And then suddenly you'll be seeing them everywhere because they all, like, all these places kind of pick up the idea from each other.
Yes.
And before you know it, you're like, has everybody been doing this all this time and no one ever told me? Like, yeah, it really can suddenly feel like there's this whole big world that was a secret and no one let you in on it. And then you're like, do I even want to do that? I'm like,
well, I mean, I think the thing
I didn't even know it existed.
Well, the thing about things like water sports, for example, is actually not an uncommon practice.
Right.
It's something that people feel immense shame about. So they don't talk about it. And if you look at the reaction of at large, the population at large, to the stories about Donald Trump.
Right.
And the hookers who were peeing on him, right? Or peeing in front of him, or nobody was ever clear about what happened. You know, it was such a big deal, and people got really unbelievably judgmental and incredibly critical of him because he's supposedly into this. Now, he may not even be into it at all, but if he is, then everybody, you know, people were talking about how disgusting that is and how demented. And yet, there's actually a large number of people interested.
Yeah.
It's just that we have so much shame around it that it's not something that's talked about. And when all of that went on, I got asked to write an article about what water sports were because didn't know.
Right.
So I wrote an article for Your Tango about water sports. And I did see things picked up everywhere. You know, you started seeing it everywhere. And now everybody is trying this, but actually, you know, there's a, it isn't everywhere, but it's also not as rare as one might think. It's just underground because it's one of the ones that still has a lot of shame attached to it.
And so actually, the funny thing is, if you're somebody reading that thinking, oh, should I be doing this? I think if you were into that, it probably would have crossed your mind by now. You know what I mean? Like our fantasies and our kind of, you know, the stuff that's deep inside us has a good way of letting us know if something's if it's literally never crossed your mind to involve urine and sex, probably that's not going to turn out to be a massive kink for you.
Probably not, although it might in a context dependent way.
Oh yeah, right?
So like if somebody's into BDSM and they're into a degree of humiliation, then even though they may have never thought of having that be part of it before, that's an activity that is traditionally found in humiliation.
Right.
Means. Right. So it could turn out to be a big turn on, not because of the urine itself, but because of the humiliation of it.
Yeah. And that's like, actually such a good
point. Or being asked to
pee
in front of someone. There's a whole group, a whole community of people. I found this out when I wrote the article in Japan, who there's a fetish about girls not being able to get to the bathroom on time and peeing in their pants.
Oh, I've heard about this, yeah.
Right? So that, again, this is like a whole thing that you might think like, you know, nobody's ever you haven't ever thought about it. Why would you find it interesting? But there's that whole thing about, it's actually fetishizing shame, which I personally find really interesting because shame is something that gets people stuck across the board sexually. So to actually see people engaging with it for me is a good thing rather yeah. than, might not be something I want to do, but it's, I can, yeah. I think it's valuable that they actually directly engage with the shame.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Also what you said about, you know, having interest in certain contexts and not others. You've really got me thinking about that now.
There's also
more examples.
Okay, so there's all sorts of things that, for example, rough sex.
Right.
In the context of a primal scene with a partner, where you feel that it's just, you're so into each other that you just can't resist really going for each other.
Yeah.
And so there's scratching and biting, and it really feels like it comes from inside. Whereas you might not otherwise, where it feels like it's being motivated from inside, you might not otherwise be interested in that in a scene or with a new partner. You wouldn't list yeah. it as something that you want.
Kind of depends desire. On the partner, maybe.
Yeah. So it might be partner specific or people who like, dominant people who like to give oral sex because for them that is a dominant move, and they set up the context so it feels dominant.
Yeah.
Whereas somebody submissive might interpret that as submissive, or I don't know. I think in the context of a surprise, of your lover surprising you, liking something because they brought it to you, or because they're really into it, and that one's really common, which I find interesting. So if your lover brings you a fantasy that they're really into, and you might not be terribly into what they're bringing you.
Right.
But their excitement fuels yours. So you're into it for that moment because they're so into it.
Yeah. I guess maybe that could work the other way around as well. Like you are interested in something as long as it's not a surprise. Like you wouldn't want somebody to kind of, in the middle of having sex, of some sort of sex session, you wouldn't want somebody to be like, cool, let's do this now. But if you knew in advance that's what you guys were planning, then that would be cool.
And or role play, for example, sometimes people are like, well, I don't want you to just introduce this into our sex life, like you and me, but I'm happy to do a role play with it. So yeah. like it's like, if we're going to do a schoolmaster schoolgirl or schoolboy role play, then caning me is fine. But I don't want you to be thinking like while we're having sex that you're going to just pick up an implement and hit me.
Yeah. Or like, exactly. You need to know when you're in that scene and when you're not. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
And I also think that, you know, like the sort of articles that it recommend, you know, spicing up your sex life to kind of maintain interest and stuff. That doesn't get taken into account, does it? It's the idea that like, so often things like role play get cited as examples. I mean, they just tend to list like various different kind of kink things that you could try in a lighthearted way. But I mean, like something like role play, for example, is reasonably labor intensive mm-hmm. and there's some preparation involved. So, you know, just from a logistical point of view, that is not going to be something that you, as a person who's never done that before, is going to suddenly be interested in doing every single time.
No, definitely not.
Maybe that's something you're interested in doing, like, I don't know, every couple of months.
I mean, role plays are labor intensive and they're fantastic. They're a lot of fun. But you have to, they're labor intensive. They require a lot of communication and negotiation. They require gathering together things so that you can set a scene. Some people are really good at setting a scene. Other people are just rubbish at it. They require a sense of humor. They absolutely require a sense of humor because a portion of the time things go wrong. And if you can't laugh at yourself, then it's just miserable. Everybody's just miserable. So you have to kind of approach it from a place that, you know, we're going to act and we're going to play and it might get real serious. And that's the other thing. They trigger too. Some role plays trigger things. So you have to be aware of the possibility that this big fantasy that you've always had that you want to do a role play about might also be something that's connected to triggers for you. And be prepared to deal with those.
Yeah, and that your partner's prepared for it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Also, just from the point of view of, like, I don't know, personally for me, I mean, this goes for vanilla sex or really any kind of sex. I need a little bit of time to get into that psychological space.
Yes.
So if I'm doing something more complex, you know, like let's say a role play or some kind of scene, I can't just be kind of like, right, I put a wash on, now let's go and do it. Like, I need a little bit of time to just get into that space.
Yeah. It's just like,
so this, you know, like the interest in doing that is going to really depend what else I've got on that day.
Well, it's going to depend on how much energy you have. Because it does take energy. And even if your role is to just receive, there's a headspace you have to be in order to do that.
Yeah. So, oh my God. Almost even more so if you're receiving, because sometimes you're not doing very much. So it's very easy for your mind to wander.
Yeah.
And you need to be really present. Otherwise, what's the point?
Yeah. If you're not really present, it doesn't work well at all. This has been really cool. How can people find you if they're looking for you?
Oh, well, I'm on Twitter, obviously. You can find me at Frankie Cookney. If you want to check out my work, my journalism, it's frankiecookney.com. I have a podcast. I'm going to say it again, third time. It's called The Second Circle. And you can find it on iTunes, Stitcher, Overcast, Player FM, wherever you get your podcasts. And that's me. I am in the process of setting up a Facebook page, but it's not there yet.
Well, that's grand. I'm putting all these links on the podcast page so that
you
can find it with the podcast notes. And I thank you for joining me. And I hope you guys enjoyed our topic of sexual interest, which went all around the houses. We talked about all sorts of stuff, from role play to monogamy to even that it may be okay to just leave things be when interest wanes.
Right.
And recognize that as a stage that you're going through. So if you were triggered by anything or you have any questions about anything we talked about, please email me at drloribeth@azofsex.com. That's drloribeth @azofsex.com. Please do follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, and check out my YouTube channel. And for a free 30-minute discovery session with me, head over to https://the-intimacy-coach.com and go to my contact page where there is a calendar and you can schedule directly. If you do enjoy the show, please, please, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, anywhere where you get your podcasts and you can review. And join me next week for the letter J. Thank you so much for listening. Bye for now. Thanks for tuning in. You were just listening to the A to Z of Sex. If you enjoyed the show, please leave a review here on iTunes and make sure you head over to www.atozofsex.com. That's A-T-O-Z-O-F-S-E-X. To subscribe to my free newsletter to help you keep your sex life sizzling. Stay tuned for upcoming weekly episodes as we work our way through the sexual alphabet to discover the wide world of sex, sexuality, desire, and intimacy. Knowledge gives you the power to create relationships that bring you satisfaction and joy. Hope to see you next week.